Tell me, Sycorax, of the time your heart was broken, how it almost killed you, how love itself decayed overnight like filet mignon left out on your kitchen table, how flies gathered to buzz your rotting meat, your heart meat, your love offal. Tell me of the bottomless pain in your chest, the razor-sharp scissors of reality to your center, how you turned to magic and witchcraft to transform you out of your misery to exact your revenge, how you sat for months in the Botanica back rooms with more seasoned Latina brujas, learning and honing your abilities. Tell me of the spells you wrought, the hexes you spawned, how you drew your own blood with a flea market switchblade, the crimson rivulets that flowed from wrist to chalice on those mariachi midnights, the thick burn of mezcal on your wounds, your tongue fat with chanting and prayer, with Marlboros and songs, how it singed your innards on those summer nights in Texas, your body and soul engulfed by the melancholy flames of forever, creating sigils, mixing tinctures, conjuring saints, spirits, anyone and anything to help ease the pain. Tell me, Sycorax, how you conjured the ghosts of Selena and Ophelia, how Selena, with electric wings and voice, attempted to ease your sorrow with songs, and held you, her broken sister, and sang, "Bitty bitty bum bum," in your ear. How Ophelia, who was taller and more powerfully built than you had imagined, appeared in her diaphanous gown, drenched from her descent from that willow branch. How you said to her, "I thought you were fiction." How she replied, "I thought the same of you." Tell me, Sycorax, of your bruised heart, swollen and bleeding, nailed above the blue door of your consciousness like some throbbing crucifix, your whole impossible existence hanging from a rusty nail. Tell me of your attempted suicide, how you drove to Matamoros and jumped in El Rio Grande, how you wet-backed your spirit into damnation on the banks of despair, how your Americanized pigsty soul was drenched by the river your grandmother crossed that eventually led to you wailing and crying in the gringa nurse's arms, to hear, now, wailing and crying again, the Mexicana-Americana tears of lost and unrequited love congregating, flowing, dividing two countries, dividing your will to live and your longing for an end. Tell me, Sycorax, how Selena and Ophelia cried and pleaded with you from either shore, watching as you bobbed in the water like a cinnamon stick until they sensed your will to live had won, how they pulled you to the Mexican side and held you, wept, howled, laughed, and chanted with you. A triumphant coven of tragically wounded witches, how they whispered and sang in your waterlogged ears, "Bitty bitty bum bum, bitty bitty bum bum." And I, of ladies most deject and wretched, that sucked the honey of his music vows, blasted with ecstasy, oh, woe is me, to have seen what I have seen, see what I see. Cada vez que lo veo pasar, biri biri bum bum. Tell me, Sycorax, how you woke at your altar, wet and muddy, dazed and mumbling, how you opened your book of shadows and wrote, "We are the dreams of the all, falling in love with one another's magnificence in spite of our limitless capacity for avarice, violence, and cruelty, and that, my sisters, is the real miracle of life." How you tore the pages from your book and set it aflame atop your black candle and began to write again. Ovum, sanguis, cerebrum, anima. Behold the girl, the woman, being born again and again.
Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening, as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, I'm joined by Luis Galindo, who is a teacher, a poet, an artist, a magical practitioner, a recovering addict, and so much more. Luis, how are you doing this week, man?
Doing great, man. I'm really a big fan of the show. I'm so glad to be asked to join you here among so many other great thinkers and practitioners. It's great to be here, man.
It's great to have you.
Thank you.
So before we jumped on this call, you know, I decided that like my voice warm-ups.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of voice acting, right?
Because I do.
I know you from some anime stuff. Mm-hmm. You did Vinland Saga, right?
I did. Yeah.
That's good stuff, dude.
Yeah, I played the King Swain.
Yeah, yeah, it's great, man. I love it.
Thank you.
And it's right up my alley, of course, with the subject matter too.
The Norse yeah, mythology. Yeah.
Love that stuff. But I was thinking, dude, so you know, my vocal warm-ups
mm-hmm.
have basically just become magic.
Yeah.
Like I did a headless right before we jumped on this call.
Did you?
Yeah. And I've been doing that more. Say again.
Yeah. All the vowels. Yeah.
All the vowels, man. And the singing. And I'll sing to Hecate too. Mm-hmm. She's kind of showing me how to sing her songs.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Just kind of by doing it. Right. And I didn't really think about it. You know, I didn't really think about it in this context until I just started saying it just now, but like, it is like a vocal warm up, man. Like when I was doing my little intro, it felt like, oh man, I'm nice and limber now.
Oh yeah. 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 I've all this time, I've never thought of it as a magical act, and I probably should. That's so obvious.
Right. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, why haven't I been doing this the whole time?
Right.
Cause I'll say kata first, you know, but I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of it too.
Sure. Sure. For me, it becomes sort of like if I'm doing a play or something, it's very calisthenic, right? It's like doing pushups. But, once I get limber and loose and then I begin to create, the ritual of performance. So you just reminded me the next time I do a play, I'm going to definitely make the warm-up part of the ritual itself. That's great. That's a great idea.
Nice, man. Yeah. Cause, you know, when we've talked about this a little bit, just in our private conversations,
mm-hmm.
I know like, you know, when I got back off the road, I was like, bro, I just got in the gym and like,
mm-hmm.
I can feel the energy moving again.
Yeah. 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 That's exactly right, man. Like, my wife recently went to Peru for the month, almost the entire month of April. And right before she left, I got really sick. And before I got sick and before she left, I was on a pretty solid, you know, couple of years weight training regimen. And I'm pretty good about it. I'm you know, I'm older now, so it's really hard to lose any flab, but I'm pretty solid and pretty strong in spite of my age. And when I got sick and she left, I found myself with all this, you know, I had to take care of the dogs. I had to take care of the house. You know, what was two persons' job became one. And so I didn't work out all of April, almost all of May. That's the longest I've gone without any kind of exercise since COVID. So my body was like, I felt like I was in entropy, you know, and now that I'm on summer break from teaching, I started exercising again. And it's the exact same thing, man. I can feel it. I immediately felt better. I love feeling sore from working out.
Yeah, man, it's a great feeling.
It is a great feeling getting tore down and rebuilt. So I'm glad to get back into that. But you're right, man. That it's, you can feel the energy moving through your body. You can feel the energy around you change. There's nothing negative about it, you know?
Yeah. And I think I just think it's good for our magic in the same way that meditation is good for our magic. You know, like we get in alignment. Yeah. In alignment.
Yeah. 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 And it's funny because even my meditation started slipping a little bit when my physical exercise, I'm really good with regimen. I'm really good with schedule. You know, I'm a Capricorn thing. I like things to be in order. Although there's a part of me that loves chaos, but I do well. I do my best work when I have a schedule. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that too.
I probably would have done really well in the military until I got kicked out for, for utter subordinates.
Right. Yeah, man. I'm the same way. Like I think that's funny too about, especially what you just said about the military. It's like, as an addict in recovery, it's really important to me to have that structure.
Yeah.
And to be like, these are things I do.
Yeah.
And I don't skip them if I can help it.
Yeah.
You know, and, that's, and that, you know, so some of that is directly like recovery related, like if I have a regular meeting or something, but I also consider like going to the gym to be just as important. My spiritual practices. But it's funny too, right? Because it's like what you were just saying, that the strict regimentation also coupled with anarchism.
Yeah.
like, dude, I'll do it, but it's got to be self motivated.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I'll do it when I fucking want to do it.
Man. Right.
Don't fucking tell me when I'm going to lift weights.
Right.
I'll lift weights 5 minutes before dinner.
Yeah.
If I want to, if I really want to, I will.
Yeah. When the mood strikes. I feel like magic is that way a lot too. That's why it's difficult. Sometimes, you know, I just had Ivy on. I don't know if that episode. Yeah. It'll be out by the time I release this.
Ivy Bromius.
Yeah. 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 Oh, Ivy Bromius.
She's great. Yeah.
She is great, man. And she got me sold on her program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to check it out for sure.
I did the last class. She did the magical goals course.
Oh, nice.
That was fantastic. And she, like, her type of magic makes a lot of sense to me, that planning is magic, you know?
Yeah. Because, you know, like, I was very resistant for a long time to, like, timing.
Yeah.
I was basically like, fuck planets. Yeah. Was like my mantra, like, fuck those goddamn space archons, man. They're not going to tell me when I can do stuff, you know? But it's funny because I was talking the same thing to her. Like, if I'm in flow and I'm keeping track of this stuff,
yeah,
dude, it lines up to the right times. And it's really just, I'm just fighting against the current.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to wrestle the planets, like, why not kind of harness?
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
harness the chaos.
Sure. I'm doing the sigil a day thing with Gordon.
Nice. With Gordon White.
Gordon White, for those of you that don't know. And back in January, it got me to thinking about timing a lot. And I knew I needed to definitely incorporate planetary timing into my work. So I got this app called Planetary Magic, and it's really helpful for me because it's got that, because the planetary hours are very regimented.
Yeah.
And if it's 7:01 when it shifts from Venus to the moon, you know, damn it, don't do it until 7:02 if you're working moon energy, right? So to me, it's really, I love it. I fell into it pretty neatly. And The only hard part is that me and my wife share a copy of the Orphic Hymns. So I got to run to the other room to grab it while I'm doing my stuff. I got to find where the hell's my book? You know, so doing hymns that line up with whatever hour it is, it's fun. It's actually fun to me.
Yeah. When I'm really doing, especially if I'm like tracking it.
Yeah.
Even just like seeing kind of what kind of stuff happens in those hours.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting to me too. Cause it'll be like, you know, it'll just line up like that. Like even if it's not magical, it's just like whatever's happening in that hour. It's like seeing it through that lens.
Yeah. Yeah. You tap into that current of energy, whatever it be, but whether it's Mars or Jupiter or the moon, man, I remember the first time I really felt it was a Hecatian new moon. It was a deep non, right?
Yeah.
New moon fell on a Monday. A Monday, and in the hour of the moon, I lined it all up perfectly, and I could feel, man, oh my God. And I did it outside under the moon, and it was literally, I could understand it, right? It was like this river of silver light just running from the top of my head all the way into the earth. It was so powerful, so nurturing, and like I was being held, you know. It was definitely feminine, wonderful, powerful feminine energy. It was like powerful and loving at the same time. It was really great.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man.
Amazing. I've been chasing it ever since, you know?
Yeah, it's hard not to when you experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Hecate energy is something else. It really is like, it's that mama bear.
Sure. That will whip your ass when you need it.
Yeah. Cause I mean, so it's been a recent thing for me. And this is, yeah, I want to say like really just last year, I had a dream, a Hecate dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really looking towards that at all. Like I wasn't looking at the Greek stuff. Well, you know, I say that, but like I was also doing a bunch of PGM stuff.
Yeah.
All because like we all kind of are.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I think I had this conversation with Ivy. I'm not sure if we were recording or not, but she's like, you know, if you're doing magic, like you're doing Greek stuff. I'm like, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that kind of like seemed like came from out of nowhere, you know? And I had really been in a place where I thought like, I felt like I was playing Pokemon with spirits. And so I was actually trying to kind of like cut back some. And then she shows up. Wow. And have been pursuing that relationship since. And it's been fantastic transformation. Like I can't even, like it's kind of one of those things for me where it's like, okay, I'm cooking with gas now. What was I cooking with before?
Right. Yeah.
Like I feel like my magic has gone to a level where it's like, was I even doing magic before?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, right? I don't even know how long it's been since I took that first Hecate course with from Jason Miller. It's been years, you know, and it doesn't even feel like it. It feels like I'm just getting to know all that stuff. And it's been daily. I have missed 2 days the entire 3 or 4 years that it's been, I think it's been like 3 years, maybe 2021 was when I started.
Nice.
I haven't missed, man. That's been the center of my practice. Right. I mean, I have my prayers. I do daily prayers, but I don't consider that part of it. That's something separate. That is gratitude and homage. And connection to divinity. Not that Hecate isn't those things, but doing a ritual, right? I was finishing up the prayer course from Gordon on Rune Soup yesterday. And there's a thread throughout the course about the difference between prayer and magic, and right, and there it's hard to make that distinction sometimes. You know, it's really hard to make that distinction. And I don't mind that it seems a bit nebulous right now. I really don't. But in my mind, I'm like, this is my prayer regimen that I do at this time. You know, in the late evening, right after dinner, I do my Christian prayers, my amulet. I fill my amulets with merit from the prayers that I just did and any good acts that I've done throughout the day, meritorious acts. And then I'll do my Hecate stuff after, right? So they're separate for me.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that's of great interest to me, and I like to talk about it when I can get a chance.
Yeah.
And you touched on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I always seem like, I feel like I'm walking almost a tightrope sometimes,
mm-hmm.
between, you know, this kind of AA idea of like, I'm not managing my life, but then at the same time, I am trying to cause change in accordance with will.
Sure. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've come up.
Right. Yeah. What is your, what do you, well, tell me a little bit about that experience, because I think it's so fascinating.
Yeah. Well, how I that was my biggest problem going into AA, right? In early sobriety. I've been sober a very long time now. I think I'm officially an old time. What?
How long you got?
14 years, 2 months and a day.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah. So step three, right? We had turn our will over to the care of God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. That doesn't line up with desire.
Right.
Right. Some of you are like, God damn it, I want this job. I want this person to fall in love with me. I want a better life. I want these things, right? And in AA, it's like if it's God's will, that will happen. And I have a hard time believing that God doesn't want me to be happy.
Right.
Right. So how I finally realized, and someone explained it to me, it was actually in rehab. I did rehab. Well, I did, you know, medical rehab where I had to dry out. And then I did the rehab in population with a bunch of other people in the jitter joint, you know,
yeah.
We call it. And this old biker explained it to me about, it was the third step of like, I can't get my head around it. And he's like, we turn our will and our power over to the care of God. And he explained it in a way that was like, when you don't know what to do, when you can't move forward on your own, then you turn your will and your power over to the care of God. God, you know, I was thinking like, so God's just going to keep me from walking in front of a bus. God's going right. to, you know.
Like God's going to go to work for me?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't want to go to work today. It's my will. So when I couldn't move forward was when I needed to, you know, Jesus take the wheel kind of.
Yeah.
To be reductive about it. And when I did that, when I realized that, that's when I had my moment, you know, I literally saw it like a flash of green light and I got it. And I realized that. When I didn't realize, I came to terms with the fact that I never stopped believing in God ever.
Yeah.
I just stopped thinking that I needed God.
Right.
Right. I can do this shit on my own. And clearly You know, I'm living out of a car. I don't have a fucking dime to my name. I can't hold a job. I got the DTs. I'm in fucking waking up in the ICU unit and not knowing how I got there. Clearly, I'm not in control of my fucking life.
Yeah.
Right? So when I finally made that, it's that paradox of recovery, man. You have to quit to win.
Yeah.
You have to give up. You have to surrender.
Surrender, yeah.
To win. And when I did that, like, I saw that light and I slept through the whole night, man. I didn't even go to dinner that day. I just went to sleep and I slept for the first time all the whole night through. And I don't know, months and months and months before, since I'd had a decent night of sleep. And I got this tattoo, right? That's flat, like the lightning bolt. Down here it says fury, because that was me. And up here it says grace, right? To remind me to, I can't ever do that again. But it's very easy for me to slip. Like anyone, you got to be, you know, you got to keep your shit in order to keep yourself safe.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with me, man. Yeah, sure. The way I square those is that it's about power. And I think I've talked about this before, but I need a power by which I can live and move in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the booze and drugs did for me.
Yeah.
And without that, I need a power by which I can live.
Yeah.
And it's like you talked about, like surrendering to that power. I think about it like becoming possessed by my higher self.
Hmm.
You know?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like if I can, like I'm going to be possessed by some sort of spirit, I think. Like I think we are just kind of like I'm a nightclub for spirits. You know, like all these ideas, all these notions, all these thoughts, all these, you know, what have you, are swirling around in me. Those are all spirits, man. That's a spirit economy. And what I can kind of do, and for me the 12 steps are an amazing tool for this, is I can get my spirit ecosystem aligned.
Mm-hmm.
So that the power is flowing in. And that doesn't mean I'm like, now sometimes I can still do crazy shit. Obviously, mm-hmm. like I'll make some decisions where I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? Right.
Right.
But you know, it, you know, I obviously still have to talk to someone that knows more than me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's better when I do.
Yeah.
And that can be inside or outside of a program, mm-hmm. you know, that can just be someone that's like a professional mentor. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, consult with God or the spirits, you know?
Yeah.
And that's in the program. And so this idea of like, you know, turning over my will, it's like, yeah, I mean, so when I turn over my lower will,
mm.
I get access to my higher will. And then that will is in alignment with my highest good, the highest good of others, and, you know, the spirits that are here to help me.
Yeah.
I'm operating from a place that's a place of power.
That's, I wish I would have heard that back when I needed to hear that. That's really good. That's really good.
It's been a great way of seeing it for me. It's helpful.
Well, that, you know, I was half joking when I said that the big book of AA is a grimoire.
Oh, it totally is, dude.
it's a powerful tome for sure.
It totally is, man. And it even says, the cool thing about it is it's kind of chaos magic too, dude, because it's like, it's all these tech that was gathered from a bunch of other religions and a bunch of other groups.
Yeah.
And it's just a recipe. Like it even says, like, you don't even have to believe this shit. Just do it and see what happens. In mm-hmm. so many words, the book says that.
Yeah. And
It works.
And you will have a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
As a result of doing these steps.
I got a buddy whose higher power, and I don't know where he's at now with it, but like when he had problems with the conception of God.
Yeah.
And so his higher power was an anime girl.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? He's sober. Like, it worked for him.
No, whatever, man. If it keeps you drinking and doing drugs.
I just love that, dude. I thought that was the most chaos magic approach I'd seen to it.
Very, very much a chaos magic approach. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, man. That sort of set me on the path. Even Jung is tied into AA,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's all in there. Can't imagine that conversation with him and Bill W. You know, what did they talk about?
Yeah, that's
wow.
You can read some of the letters.
Yeah.
And then, so for those who aren't aware, like, yeah, that's what kind of like one of the big pieces, the spiritual piece to the one of the big spiritual pieces of AA came through Jung, where one of the original guys, Roland Hazard, went to Carl Jung, and Carl Jung was like, ah, you're fucked.
Yeah, I can't help you.
I can't. Like, I've never seen someone of your disposition recover. And then he's like, well, have you ever seen it? And he talked, and then Carl Jung starts talking about, well, there have been some cases in history of people having a profound spiritual experience, and it causes a total psychic change.
Mm-hmm.
And now that happened to me.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't always happen like that.
Yeah.
But that happened to me. And that for me, it, you know, the drugs sort of beat me into submission. I now see them as a teacher personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my teach. Like one of the great, like alcohol and drugs have been one of the greatest teachers of my life. I approach them with gratitude.
Mm.
I don't, you know, well, of course, I also approach them with respect because sure. I can't safely do them. But
no, you know, when I tried to dry out, man, I had a pretty horrible experience with like a spiritual experience with delirium tremens, because by the time I tried to quit, it was too late. I couldn't do it on my own, and I didn't know that. Right. And so it started, I just finished a gig in Los Angeles. I was doing a play and I was trying to decide whether or not I was going to move back to LA. And the director of this particular theater, who's become a very dear friend of mine, she said, because it was obvious to everyone but me, she's like, you need to go home and get some help. You need to get cleaned up. You're in no shape to do anything but that right now. Just do that and you'll always have a place here, but for now you need to go take care of yourself. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And on the plane ride home, I was thinking about it and right, okay, I'll try it, right? Because I really want to make a change in my life. That night I started sweating and, you know, I had one drink on my way home. My brother pity on me and took me to a bar, let me have one drink and took me home. And I sweating and shaking and I ran to the store in the morning and grabbed a 40 and just decided to sip on it all day to try to keep the shakes at bay. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And I took some, I took like a painkiller, like codeine or something, like a Vicodin that my mom had in her drawer. I took one and then I took another one and then the shakes stopped. And then that night I started having hallucinations. I was hearing voices and I saw at the foot of the bed this black figure, like a vapor with red eyes, and it was pointing, like he was pointing at the watch on his wrist.
Wow.
And I was like, oh God, and I started praying. And And then I woke up and then I told my mom what happened. And she's just like, oh, you just need to pray. You just need to pray. I'm like, okay. And all day long, I'm sipping on another 40 and popping a Vicodin here and there. And I stopped shaking for a little while. And then I start sweating again at night. And then the hallucinations just got so bad that I could hear like someone tapping at the window, like it felt like a long fingernail, like tapping at the window. And I was like, oh God. And I ran outside and there was nothing there. And I'm shaking and I'm trembling. And then I go back to lay down. The bed is soaked. I'm soaked from sweat. And it finally happened. Like, I was like, God, help me, help me. And voices, like they were whispering in my ear, like they were this close to my head going, too late, too late, too late. And it just started, they started laughing and cackling. And I saw like shadows rushing around the room, and I couldn't, and I'm getting fucking chills just thinking about it. And I couldn't decide what was real and what was not. And I think the reason is because it was real.
Yeah.
And I woke my mom up and like, please, mom, please take me to the fucking hospital. Take me to the hospital. And that's all I remember. And then I remember being in an ambulance for a minute. And then I remember the doctor talking to me, and I'm in a gurney, like a hospital bed. I mean, and, I'm trying to explain to her what was going on with the drinking. And I don't remember what this doctor lady, it was a woman, and I don't remember what she was saying, but because they were surrounding the doctor, they were like these demonic looking beings, like holding her shoulder, looking at me and making the hush sound with their fingers, like, shh, right? And then all of a sudden, man, I don't know what happened between the doctor and them, because I snapped. Something in me, in my mind, snapped. I had a nervous breakdown. But the door of the, where I was staying, in the room I was staying, opened, and all these beings started coming through. And I was able to see, like, the door was halfway open and they were coming in like this portal or something. And I can't even describe to you what they looked like. They looked so mind-bogglingly strange. And I could see every side of the door at the same time. I could see the left side of the door, the right side of the door, up on top, below, straight ahead, and coming back from the other way all at once.
Oh yeah, that does sound like an interdimensional portal.
I like couldn't wait. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, sorry, not to interrupt, but just like the way that you could see every angle of it, like it's like something showing up in a bubble, right?
I don't know. Anyway,
continue.
So I just I snapped at that point, right? And then the next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in restraints. I'm bound to this bed in the ICU unit at some hospital, Clear Lake, Texas. And the doctor comes in and she's like, this is someone I'd never seen before. She's being very mean. She's like, do you know what you did to the orderlies? You think I should loosen your restraints now? Why would I do that? And she was, and I didn't know what I had done. She's like, you're staying there and you're not moving. And I was like, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm like, can I speak to the chaplain? She started laughing. She started laughing at me. And I couldn't understand why. I'm like, please, I need to see, this is a spiritual, I remember saying something like, this is a spiritual matter. And she's like scoffed and left. And eventually they, I'm like, I need to use the restroom. She threw a bedpan at me.
Damn.
Like it landed on my chest. I'm like, well, that's half the equation. How about loosening these fucking straps? Then I realized I sounded like The Exorcist. Like,
oh, wow. Yeah, dude. Yeah, that's a line from that.
Yeah. And, you know, then I finally calmed down. They pumped me full of sedatives and I wasn't, you know, the doctor's like, yeah, your liver's on the way to being no good. You need to stop. And I stayed in there, I think I was 4 days. And I got out and people came to see me, just family. And I decided to go to rehab and I had to wait. I was on a waiting list. I live in Houston. My dad used to live in Corpus Christi, which is about 3.5 hours south towards Mexico, towards the border. And they got me into a rehab down there, but I had to wait. And so I went down to Corpus and I kind of white knuckled it for a minute, but then I found my dad's booze and I took a couple of drinks and he found out and he hid it. So I drank all the Scope and Listerine that they had in the house. I drank that. And my dad's like, God damn, man, what the fuck? What are you drinking that for? I'm like, because I need a drink. And they took that away. And my last drink was, I found a bottle of rubbing alcohol in the cabinet, and I started drinking that. I did cut it with cranberry juice because I wasn't completely insane.
You're civilized, you know.
I was a little silly. It was a Cape Cod, thank you very much. Heavy on the cod. I don't even know what that means. I have no idea what that means. But I damn sure drank fucking rubbing alcohol. If you don't think this shit will tear you down to being a degenerate, no good motherfucker, it will. And then I finally was able to hold my shit together after that. My dad's like, you're drinking rubbing alcohol, dude. What the, you know.
Yeah, that ain't normal, bro.
It's not normal. So I white-knuckled it until I could get into the medical wing of the rehab and I had to detox for 10 days before I could be admitted into the living space. But there was one moment when I was in the ICU that friendly spirits arrived and they surrounded my bed. So I've always had this sense that I was looked out for, man.
Yeah.
You know, ever since then. And there were benevolent spirits. I could tell because I wasn't afraid. And I felt a sliver of peace for that moment. Like hope, you know, that I wasn't too far gone.
Mm.
So finally I got out of rehab and like any good drug addict, alcoholic, I thought, my first thought was, I know, I'm going to move to Hollywood. So I did. A month out of rehab, I had $2,000 to my name, $2,000. And didn't have a car. Moved to Los Angeles and did my 12 steps in LA, in Hollywood. At the club was called By the Book, the By the Book Club on Mansfield Street, just next to Hollywood High School, right off of Hillhurst. I mean, no, right off of Santa Monica Boulevard. Yeah. Yeah. And the rest, I've been sober ever since.
Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. That's, so real quick, if there's anyone listening that's going through this, we both been through this and we're sober. There is a way out and it is possible and you're not alone. And I'll put some resources, you know, that are to make available in this, because I think it's important.
If you're listening to this, you see me on social media, you can reach out to me anytime you want.
And of course, me too. You can reach out to either of us. Hell yeah. I was just, I just picked up my, I was doing divination last night with this. It's my, my 3-year cocaine anonymous chip.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, that's right here. Cool. It's weird.
Yeah.
Of course I was doing divination with it too. But yeah, so that's interesting that you mentioned, I think there is such a spiritual element to this. And, you know, depending on who you ask, that's either overemphasized or underemphasized. But I personally think it can't really be overemphasized. I think that I was possessed at some points.
Yeah.
And I opened myself up to that. It's not like it was like I'm not deferring blame. I did all the stuff, you know?
Sure.
But I was inviting things to me because there are some things that, I mean, the human body is already a portal, but then I'm like dialing it into certain realms when I'm doing certain stuff, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's none of it's good.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be positive.
Only in the sense that, for me at least, only in the sense that eventually it brought me to a point of complete and utter demoralization to where I was willing to seek some sort of other solution, right?
Yeah.
But that's kind of a roundabout thing. I wouldn't really recommend it.
I mean, you know, there's also that Bill Hicks bit, you know, that, you know, drugs did do some positive things. I mean, go home. If you don't believe that, go home tonight and take all your music and burn it, because everybody that made that music that's enhanced your life, real fucking high on drugs.
Dude, you know, but it's interesting because it really, and this will kind of is a nice segue for us, I think, because it'll bring us to kind of poetry and
and
the muse, right? Because I thought that I needed that stuff to connect, to get to that place, to get to the creativity, to access the muse, when really the truth is that if I was able to access those things, those were inside of me all along.
Yeah.
It came from within. It wasn't the drugs that gave it to me. Right. The drugs just helped me to kind of, enter another state of consciousness than what I was used to. Or maybe, you know, honestly, I think that at first they kind of did a little magic trick where they kind of took away some self, only later on to extract a much higher toll, right?
Yeah.
At first it giveth, then it taketh, kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, man. I mean, I wasn't able to really write anything worth a fuck until I got sober.
And oh, interesting.
The writing came from that, right? I mean, I didn't start dabbling in magic until much later after I got sober, right?
Okay.
Like, I was in my 40s when I started. Like, my late 40s when I got into magic. So, this was in my early 30s. Early 30s. No, it wasn't my late 30s. Who am I kidding? I was 37 when I got sober. Anyway, so I couldn't put two words together to make any real poetry. I wanted to, but I was terrible at it. And when I started doing journaling and stuff in AA and writing my four step, which took me about 3 months to do, I filled 3 of those 100-page fucking notebooks for my fourth step. It took forever. And then the writing just kept coming, you know? I had studied, I went to school to become a Shakespearean actor. I went to a really good theater school on the East Coast, and I studied how to do Shakespeare for 3 years. And then that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a Shakespearean actor. And so I did. And I moved to LA and I joined this Shakespearean theater troupe. Great, great theater company called the Independent Shakespeare Company. They work in Griffith Park in the summer. And eventually, even Shakespeare's words weren't enough for me to express myself. And I was like, I need my own words. I need to say my own words. And that's when I started really writing. I had a friend who was a poet in grad school at acting school. His name was Summerhill Seven. And he's a renowned African-American poet. And he's the one. He's like, you need to start writing fucking poems, man. You're ready. You're ready. Just start doing it. Just don't fuck around. He dared me. Right. And that's when I did it. And then I realized I could, now that I was clear headed, I could sort of put things together. And it was funny because I lived in Charles Bukowski's old neighborhood.
Oh, cool.
And I would walk by his house, one of his houses all the time. It was got a landmark, you know. And it was like, all these years of trying to be him, now I'm sober as a preacher and writing poems in the same streets that he was writing them on, except he was a raving madman alcoholic, and I'm a raving madman recovering alcoholic. It was bizarre.
Beautiful.
Yeah. He wrote this poem called Hard Times on Carlton Way, and I lived at the corner of Carlton and Serrano Avenue. It was fucking amazing. But I wasn't able to get to the clarity like you're talking about, letting that unfiltered part, those unfiltered parts of my poetic myself, which was poetry, to start coming out. I now had access to that part of myself that I couldn't before.
Yeah, that's what I think is a really good example of what I was talking about earlier, is that access to that power.
Yeah.
That's within us.
Yeah. It's and it's all that creative force, and depends on, everybody's got some of it, you know. I'm certain of that. Just comes out in different ways, whether you're a welder or a cook, a chef, a lawyer, a doctor, an artist, whatever. It's all, I think it all comes from that impulse of, you said it earlier, like our higher self, right? Like that thing that we're supposed to be, that part of us that, that expression that wants to live through us, that part of God that is trying to express itself in the known universe through us, that is that God impulse, you know?
Well, whatever. Said. Yeah, well said.
I think I'm paraphrasing Gordon White right there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to get on that prayer course. I haven't done that yet.
Oh, it's great. It was great. Yeah. But yeah, man, like when I got sober is when I started getting really interested in the occult and the arcane. I didn't have a girlfriend. I didn't have I had a part-time job. You know, I was, didn't have a car. And so I spent a lot of time watching YouTube videos in my room. And I finally stumbled upon two videos. Like, you know, everybody knows these videos. It's, Grant Morrison's talk at Disinfo about sigils and chaos magic.
Yeah, it's classic.
That shit blew my mind. And the other was Alan Moore, I watched this documentary called The Mindscape of Alan Moore. He talks about language as magic and made perfect sense to me because it's when I was just writing poems. And I was so terrified to try to do sigils, right? Because, man, that's something I should definitely talk about is like, I've had these mystical experiences all my life. I've had bizarre spiritual experiences since I can remember. And I was always afraid of them because I grew up Catholic and I was an altar boy. And that all, anything connected to that was the devil, right?
Right.
And you're supposed to stay away from that shit. So I was terrified of it, but I was fascinated. And I knew there was something else, right? And my aunt, my mother's aunt, my great aunt was a curandera. And she would pray on us and pray over us. And sometimes she would go into a trance and speak. A spirit would be speaking through her. Anyway, I lost my train of thought. What was I talking about?
You're talking about having spiritual experiences your whole life.
Yeah.
And growing up Catholic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that all the way back to, that's why I was afraid to do sigils and stuff, right? So I kept it at bay even longer. Like, I was like, I'm interested. I'll just stay here in the shallow end and just talk about it. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Listen and read about it. So I never did any official magic until much later. But when I finally did, I gave myself permission to do it. It was life altering. And I'm glad it happened. I'll never forget when it happened. I was in a play and I just was dying for something different because I knew there was something out there that I could latch onto and explore and find fulfillment in. Because AA wasn't doing it for me anymore. It kept me sober, right? And I just wanted more. I just wanted more of that spiritual experience. And I'm not knocking AA at all. It served its purpose. It kept me sober and it taught me how to live as a sober person. But I wanted more of the, I wanted magic. I wanted to learn how to do magic. And I had always had. And I was sitting in the parking lot going to rehearsal, waiting for rehearsal to begin. And I found Rune Soup. I found the podcast and I listened to Gordon and Connor Habib.
Yeah, I love those episodes.
Yeah, and just knocked my head off. Like, this is it. And I just devoured that shit for the next couple of months and finally joined on my birthday, like the following year. So it was a long time. And I was in my 40s by that time. I came to it late. But I was always afraid of it, right? Like since I was a kid. And it's weird, man, because where I grew up, you know, close to Mexico, closer, right? Everybody believed in it. Everybody believed in magic. Everybody knew it was there. Everybody knew my aunt as a curandera, right? And everybody, there's like Mexican folk tales of, you know, cryptids like La Llorona, like El Cucuy, El Camucho. There's like the Mexican boogeyman, right? And then there's also La Llorona. I had this experience when I was a kid. There was a big hole in the back of my grandmother's house, like a big hole. I don't know why it was there. It was like a foot and a half deep, 2 feet deep, about the size of a manhole cover. And it was raining and it stopped raining. And I had these plastic boats and I wanted to go in the hole and play with them. And my, cause it was full of water. And my grandma was like, don't go back there. You can't go back there. And I went back there anyway, and something fucking grabbed me and started pulling me in. I remember it happening. I was very young. I was like 4. And my aunt and my uncle came and pulled me out. And they were crying. They were like, you know, Ama, you know, something had Louis. They were pulling him in the water. It was pulling him in the water. My grandmother just started freaking out. I told you not to go back there. Started praying over me, and we were all crying, and I didn't know what it was. And then anytime I would ask any of them what it was, no one would talk about it. Then they all passed away, and now I can't ask them. And that was like the first kind of weird experience. You know, it was always it was La Llorona, you know. You know the story of La Llorona?
Vaguely, but do you mind going over it real quick for the listeners?
Yeah. So La Llorona was a woman in Mexico that her husband was unfaithful and was fooling around on her, and to punish him, he drowned the children in the river. She was forced to walk the riverways of Mexico and Texas, apparently anywhere there's water. You can hear her crying, moaning for her children, and she'll never be able to take back what she did. That's basically the story of La Llorona. And she's doomed to walk in perpetuity, in eternity, in mourning for her lost children, for what she did to her children. And the story is that stay away from the water because she'll come and get you if you're a kid. If you're a kid and you're alone, La Llorona will take you away. And the, you know, parents will threaten you with La Llorona, right? If you don't behave, La Llorona is going to come and get you, right? And La Llorona means the weeping woman, right? So you can hear her crying. I don't know what the fuck it was. I have no idea, but that shit really did happen. It was terrifying. And only instilled more fear in me and made me want to be an altar boy. But the fascination was still there. And one night, my aunt, the curandera, was praying over me and my family. And my little brother, my middle brother, I have two brothers. The middle one, all of a sudden, he's standing there and he just, and he passed out while she was praying, and he just fell on the floor. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing to my brother? Leave my brother alone. And my mom and my grandmother were like, Louis, shut up. And my aunt was speaking, this spirit was speaking through her, saying that my brother was in danger and he needed to be careful. And like, there were bad spirits after him. And it fucking terrified me again. And like, so we had to be very careful and pray every day. And, you know, this is like hardcore, like Mexican curanderismo. We had to carry around a bag of lemons. I don't know why. That's what they told us to do, and say these specific prayers every day. And that shit, you know, that was many years later after my incident as a kid. So I always felt like there was something bad after me and my brothers, right? And then enter, you know, my mom and dad split up and we moved from Corpus to Houston. And that's when I really kind of gave up on, started turning my back on God, because that's immediately after that. So we moved when I was 10. By 11, I had my first blackout drunk. And I was already drinking and taking drugs, Mandrax and smoking weed. And it just kept going, right? And I turned my back on Christianity. I mean, I went to confirmation just to please my mom for about a year. And then I was like, my mother couldn't take communion because her and my father got divorced. And I was like, this is bullshit. Fuck, you know, I'm not I'm not down with this anymore. Fuck this. And so I just kind of gave up on all kinds of any kind of spirituality. And I just turned to drugs and alcohol to make me feel normal.
I relate to that a lot.
Yeah, I was angry about everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it worked for a long time. Yeah, worked for about 20 years. And then it didn't. But
then the rug gets pulled out.
Yeah. You know, and so it always, but the threat of the supernatural, the occult was always just right there, right behind my anger at spirituality. And fast forward to now, you know, how do I make okay the Catholic part of my ancestry, which is the Spanish and the Native American part of my ancestry, right? Because if you're Mexican, more than likely you're Spanish and you're mestizo, you're Spanish and Indian, right? So I'm about 30% Native, and the rest is Spanish and Portuguese and all kinds of other things, but mostly Spanish, Portuguese, and Indian. And so now going into the, I want to know about that part, the indigenous thinking, right? Enter, you know, ayahuasca and shamanism, which kind of blew the door wide open again, right? So magic was the first door, and then plant medicine being the second. So here we are now. Like, now I'm, you know, no doubt the Catholic tech, there's merit there. It works. And I use it. But, you know, in my DNA, there's oppressor, there's colonizer, and decolonized. And it's strange. It feels weird. You know, I don't know how to, I'm learning how to make them coexist. Well,
yeah, that's one of the, I think that's a beautiful, one of the beautiful medicines of working with the dead. I mean, it's difficult when it's ancestors because they have so much influence on us, right? Like,
yeah.
they basically, like, the way I understand it is, I actually have no natural defense against the influence of an ancestor, good or bad. Because since I have a sympathetic link to them, I am made of them.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a negative ancestor that wants to try to act through me, I don't have a natural defense. Like, and that's why it's so important, because I've got to come up with some sort of defense.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest defenses in that sense is ancestor work, doing elevations on my ancestors.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, we all have good and bad,
mm-hmm.
in our ancestral lines.
Yeah.
And I think I might have told you this one time, but I was in Oakland Cemetery walking through, and it's a very old cemetery in Atlanta, so it's like segregated also. But it's also segregated by economic. So there's like a lot going on, right? There's like the Jewish part, there's like the black part, there's the rich white part, there's the poor white part, there's the poor black part. Like, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah.
There's civil war, there's you know, so you've got Confederate, you've got Union, a little bit of Union, a lot of Confederate.
Intricately haunted.
And like, so And it's like a necropolis, right? It's huge. It's a Victorian cemetery. It's beautiful. There's a beautiful gardens. And when I'm walking, I was walking through there one time and I just got this impression, this psychic impression that said, we're all equal under here.
Yeah.
We're all below the ground. It is the great equalizer, the great leveler. Like, no matter what, that's where we're going to end up. And to me, that's beautiful because it means that I am you. We are one. Like, we're one in death.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's, you can dig in there and find that in Christianity too, if you're interested. You know, the whole, there's like a, like the cult of the saints, but, but I think that it's just a really beautiful, and honestly, like, I don't know where I got this. It might be from some Buddhist stuff too, but like the idea of sitting with death and imagining, you know, you can meditate on your own death. You can meditate on something else's death. I find it creates a tremendous amount of compassion in me to think that to spend time with my death or with someone else's death, you know?
Yeah. There's that great, you know, it reminds me of that scene in Hamlet when he finds Yorick's skull.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, even Alexander the Great has, you know, has been turned into a cork that stops up a beer barrel. You know?
Yeah, I love it.
It's brilliant, you know. Yeah, that's right, man. And I've done a lot of ancestor work, and I did some with you know, shamanic ancestral work. And there's always been indigenous people present in those workings. There's always been Native Americans and Spanish, always. Like, it didn't take long in that work to go really far back.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I love it.
Yeah, to where the conflict actually began, right? And I don't even know which tribe. It's more than likely the Coahuiltecan Indians of South Texas, North Mexico. But my mother told me that her great-grandmother, who I met when I was young, was Apache. And there were definitely Apache Indians in Texas. So somewhere in there, and I wish I knew what, because that was lost, you know, I became, and it's when you get that ancestry DNA report back, you're like, so, you know, Mexican is just like it's just a word that means that my people were born in this country. What I really am is a Native American and Spanish descendant, you know, along with some other DNA strands in there as well. Like a pot of menudo or gumbo or something. It's like many different ingredients in there. And I always, you know, kind of, they're like, you know, there's like a war in your DNA, right? There's like colonizer and colonizee. And how do you balance that out?
And now they're dancing in you. That's the crazy part, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've always read and heard that, you know, if you're the one thinking these thoughts, you're the one that's supposed to help elevate your ancestors and end the cycle of pain and do something about it. So
yeah,
been definitely doing that. And the intro to that was Dr. Four's book, Ancestral Medicine, right?
I had Steve Niner on here who works in that.
Really?
Yeah, he does the four sessions. Like, he's like registered to do it or however that works.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And he took me through one. And man, that's, it's so interesting. And, you know, because basically, like, I know you've done it, so you understand, but I'm just going to explain for everybody else. It's like, you're basically going back to, like, when you're, like, when your ancestors were indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was a really long time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a little bit more of a hop, skip, and a jump, right? Because.
Do you know which tribe?
No. I mean, I'm, dude, doesn't exist anymore because my ancestors were indigenous in Europe.
Oh, like, I got you. Right,
you know what
right.
I'm talking about? Like, yeah. It totally erased and gone.
Yeah.
Been moved, pushed over the chessboard by empire, basically. Mm-hmm. And so one of the visions I saw was like just a boat crossing the ocean, and it was like an ocean of tears because they were leaving behind the spirits that they knew and going to this new place. And then you see this cycle repeat itself out where these people who are tremendously hurt go on to hurt other people. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this, this never ending sort of chain. And well, you know, it can end, but you get that, that perspective. And so, yeah, man, I was seeing like Green Man stuff and like fairy faith and like, but also like the Northern things, but like, that's all, that's mostly like, dude, we have so little of that, you know, that we don't even like, we just don't know how they practice.
Right.
I mean, maybe more so of the fairy stuff, but like, yeah, the Norse is put together from like very few sources.
Right.
And I didn't even know, you know, that's an interesting thing too. Like, so Odin came into my life before I even knew that that was a big part of my ancestry. I actually started doing the research later on and like also had some stuff happen in my family where like what we thought was not what the reality was. I'll just put it that way without sharing too much.
Sure, you know? Sure.
And it flipped my ancestry kind of on its head. And then I found out I had way more like German and Norwegian. And I was like, oh, that makes sense why that guy showed up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember hearing your story, man. God, what a powerful story you told about Odin and Odin coming into your life. That was some heavy shit, man. Wow. What an incredible story.
I was definitely not looking for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You listened and it's, well, it's all part of this same conversation, right? We got to go back to move forward.
Yeah.
We got to discover what was back there in the first place so we can make it make sense and keep going.
Yeah, and we get this amazing opportunity to integrate into a whole new thing. Like, we get to make a new thing. We get to use pieces of things that have been.
Yeah.
I'm not totally running away from the past, but I'm also not trying to 100% recreate it.
Yeah.
And so I get to kind of, and that's part of the ancestral work too, and working with the descendants, right? Is like, is creating that better world.
Yes. And that's right. And here at the end of capitalism, I love what like Bio Akomolafe says, like, that the way that we move forward is probably not even thought of yet, and it's going to come through the cracks in the system itself. The breaking up of the system is going to create these fissures, and what grows from those fissures is probably the things that are going to help us move forward. We might not even know what they are yet.
I love that way of thinking about it too, because I agree. I think that like it's a matter of like spiritual evolution.
Yeah.
And the evolution of us as spirit beings, that like there are modes that we can't even imagine yet. And so we can't actually even necessarily predict them because we don't even know what it looks like. Like once we have the consciousness to be able to, or the mind that can comprehend it,
yeah,
we'll be there, because it's like chicken or the egg kind of shit to think about, right? But like, it won't exist until we have the mind to conceive it, but we won't have the mind to conceive it until we're sitting there making it exist, you know?
Right. Or it exists in the coming together of things that are here. And we wake up to seeing how to integrate these ways of thinking that will help us move forward without killing each other.
Yeah, and destroying everything else. And
but if you look at the fuck, you just look at the news, you look at what's going on in the world, it just seems like we're not even close. You know? Or maybe we are. Maybe it's like right on the other side of this.
It is. Dude, that's good magic. It is right on the other side of this.
Yeah.
That's the magic. It's like it is. Connor Habib says a lot of stuff that sticks with me. Yeah. And that I can like turn around in my head for like years, honestly. And there was one thing he said, I don't remember what episode it was, on his podcast, I think. And he said, what if all the bad things are going away? What if it is? What if they are? And it was just like it's kind of just like an invitation to think with that idea.
Yeah.
You know how he does?
Yeah, yeah.
But what if it's just on the other side of this?
Yeah.
We're cresting that wave, and on the other side is a far green country beyond our imagining, you know? That's the place I want to live in.
Yeah.
That, you know, say again.
There's hope, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so easy to let that fire die.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that like, it's just angels will just like, if I call an angel up and talk to an angel,
yeah,
a lot of the time, the stuff they say is just like, keep the fire burning, keep the fire, hold the fire, keep it burning, carry the fire, carry it through. And like, to an extent where it's like, okay, this must be important because you won't stop repeating it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And
note taken.
That makes me think of Ekate too, right? The torch.
Sure. Oh yeah.
And that's, you know, that's, we have this amazing opportunity to get to do that.
Yeah. I guess we'll all get our own apocalypse.
Yeah.
And
you know what? It's been happening. I think it's been the apocalypse for 2,000 years, dude, or more.
Been going on.
We've been living in the ruins for a while, dude, but we're like realizing I live in the ruins is its own apocalypse.
Yeah. Go on Twitter for 10 minutes.
You know, dude. Like, yeah.
I didn't think the apocalypse would be this fucking stupid.
I don't go on Twitter. So,
good. See, I'm stupid for going on.
I think it's a fucking weapon. Like, I really honestly think it's like a mind weapon. Like, it's a biological warfare,
yeah,
but of your mind.
You're probably right.
Okay, but what I think about, this is what I think about, dude, and this is a really good, this is a good exercise and a good prayer and a good mantra for this time, is that when I am facing that Balrog,
mm-hmm,
on the bridge, that Balrog that is fear, that is self-pity, that is doubt, that is worry, that is resentment, I tell it, you shall not pass. I am a servant of the secret fire, a wielder of the flame of Arnor. The dark fire will not avail you, flame of Udun.
Yes.
You cannot pass.
Yes. Fuck yes.
That's that good shit, dude.
That's a prayer.
Dude, I had to do during like COVID, that was like my inner mantra.
Yeah. Man. I love that. Yeah. From Gandalf's canon. I love it. Yeah, I think about that a lot. That's my favorite scene in all three movies.
That's so good, man.
Yeah. And it reminds me of, like, you know, recovery. Like, I've fought demons. Like, yeah. How can I be afraid of, you know, what so-and-so thinks about my performance in a play?
Right.
You know what I mean? Or what other petty thing that I'm worried about?
Or if I'm going to get the job, or if she's going to leave me, or if, like, whatever it is, right? Like, there's all these things that I can go through in my mind.
Trivial.
And it's like, I got to remember who I am.
Yeah.
That's my thing. Remember who you are.
Remember who you are. And I was having this conversation with my wife just yesterday, like, to maintain an animist worldview, right? I still have to remind myself, like, when I start thinking like a materialist, I'm like, wait a minute. That's not how you're supposed to think about this. That's antiquated thinking. This is much better way of thinking about it. And
yeah,
when I start remembering that the cosmos is alive and that I'm in co-creation with it, then I'm able to move forward.
And also that I'm an immortal spirit.
Right. Yeah. This is not the end.
Yeah. I get to, like, I get to see that. I get to see that I don't like this phrase because it's such a fucking business buzz phrase, like that 1,000-foot view. You know what I mean? But I can't really put it any other way, right? I get the perspective of, like, dude, I've done this a bunch of times before. And, you know, if I'm interested, I'll do it a bunch of times again.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to look at it kind of on this long timeline where it's like, and, you know, I used to, like, kind of despair over the idea of living multiple lives. Now I'm like, it's cool. I live on Earth. Like, I'm from here. I'm not probably going to go anywhere. I want to stick around and help, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of a, that's like a chill bodhisattva vow. Like, I'm not trying to, like, I'm not trying to make any oaths, but, like, I'm like, yeah, I'll hang around for a while.
What is mine to do? What am I supposed to do? Tell me.
Yeah, I like it.
Hope I remember.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's like my goal every day is to remember who I am, remember what this is and what I'm here to do. Because that forgetting, I think that all the evil that's done in the world is just done in blindness. I think it's just blindness and fear. And the more I can wake up, I get, like, I used to be a big prison planet guy, right? Where, like, we're in the Black Iron Prison. This is a Gnostic hellscape where the Archons are fucking harvesting our shit. Like, that was my, my, and dude, like, I can't say that isn't a piece of it, but I think there's more to it than that, right? And nowadays, my goal is to be as free as possible in the prison so that the prisoners can look and see, oh, shit, this door ain't locked.
Yeah.
I can walk out.
Fucking A. Oh, that's great. I love that. Yeah. Oh, I got to remember that one.
Yeah, man.
Oof. Man, we've covered a lot of stuff. This has been
Yeah, we did. This has been great, man.
I just looked at the time. Like, God damn.
I was going to say, it didn't feel like it. Is there anything else, like, specifically that you wanted to touch on?
I think we covered most of what I had in mind. I just, because of people like you, people like, you know, the Discord we're on and the Rune Soup Premium members and Ivy's group, it just makes my life a lot better. And I'm really, really grateful. I'm really in deep gratitude for people like you and all the other good folk out there trying to make a difference and trying to make the world a better place. It gives me a lot of hope. It gives me a lot of examples of how to think and move forward in a time and a place where things get really scary sometimes.
Yeah.
And that I'm truly grateful. I'm grateful to have this conversation with you. I'm grateful to continue having these kinds of conversations with others where I can learn, where I can incorporate ways of thinking and techniques and tools into my own life that will help me make my sphere of influence better. And maybe we can all learn, evolve, and move forward together towards that bright light.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
Fucking A. Yeah.
Dude, I'm grateful for you coming on. I really had a great time. The time just flew by.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I haven't had a good talk like that in a really long time.
Hell yeah, man. I'm excited to share it.
Thank you. I'm excited to
share it with everyone else.
I'm excited to be out in the on the airwaves.
Nice. Hell yeah. Well, cool, man. Thank you so much. And you know, I'm sure we'll think of about 20 things that we didn't cover if we want to, and then we'll just have to do it. We'll have to do it again.
Right. I'm going to a barbecue right after this. My niece's graduation party. And
nice.
And I'm going to be like eating a rib going, damn it. I just thought, I should have said that.
But that's good, because then we'll just have to do another one of these. But
anytime, man. I'll be glad.
Again, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations to your niece. And I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
Yeah, you too, brother. Keep the fire burning.
Hell yeah.
Word out.
Bye, brother. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.